Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good and bad martinis for conservatives today, as well as a champagne toast to one of the great people in the conservative movement in Washington. And we'll talk about that towards the end of the podcast. We're also sponsored today by Simply Safe Home Security. More on them a little later as well. Jim, let's start with the good martini, and that is that the Democratic Unity Tour hasn't actually spawned a whole lot of unity. Basically, it's Tom Perez trying to assure the really far-left base that he's their champion, and Bernie Sanders telling everybody, he's also far-left, that the Democratic Party is a complete failure right now. He talked about this a little bit on Face the Nation yesterday with John Dickerson, and here's what he had to say about the current state of the Democratic Party.
The model of the Democratic Party is failing. We have a Republican president who ran as a candidate, as the most unpopular candidate in modern history of this country. Republicans control the House, the Senate, two-thirds of governor's chairs. And in the last 8 years, they have picked up 900 legislative seats. Clearly, the Democratic Party has got to change.
And Sanders actually does fairly well on the initial diagnosis, Jim. Of course, it's his prescription that's a mess.
A party, John, that speaks to the pain of the working class in this country. Middle class is shrinking. 43 million people living in poverty. Almost all new income and wealth is going to the top 1%. People can't afford to send their kids to college. They can't afford child care. They can't afford health care. The Democratic Party has got to take the lead, rally people, young people, working people, stand up to the billionaire class. And when we do that, you're going to see voter turnout swell. You're going to see people coming in and running for office. You're going to see Democrats regain control of the United States Congress.
We should point out that Jim's internet is out, so he's joining us by phone from a Starbucks. So if any of his answers sound inexplicably more liberal, that's probably why, just the osmosis of the atmosphere.
I can thank my my home internet provider. They're no Simply Safe, let me tell you that, Greg. Not something you can rely on. So, this is the worst. Watching Bernie Sanders tour with Tom Perez is the worst unity tour since Abraham Lincoln did that show with John Wilkes Booth. And for everyone groaning, what, too soon? And you're right. I think the irony and the New York Times, a couple of places, have written pretty trenchant and astute assessments of it. Bernie Sanders is all about what you and I would call class warfare, or at least economic grievances, right? About the idea of a working class, a poorer class, and a middle class getting the short end of a stick, and a wealthy class always coming out on top. And while we might have a lot of disagreements with him philosophically, the broad assessment of the difficulties of affording higher education or affording health care, even though Obamacare was supposed to fix all this, the man speaks some truth every now and then. The problem is that the core of the Democratic Party these days is much more focused on identity politics, much more focused on culture issues, on abortion, on gay rights, and other issues like that, which has never really been Bernie Sanders' main motivating drive and factor. It's always been in the realm of economics. And so you have him endorsing this candidate for mayor out in Nebraska who is, pro-life or functionally pro-life or insufficiently pro-choice in the eyes of Planned Parenthood and groups like that. And various other Democrats are saying, why are we watching, why is this unity tour endorsing a pro-life Democrat? We hate the pro-lifers. Pro-lifers are the worst. And you have various comments these guys have made and said, whoa. We don't want to see pro-life. We don't want to support pro-life Democrats. As far as we're concerned, they're the enemy. I would like to urge these Democrats to look back to see how they built their majority back in 2006 on the backs of guys like Heath Shuler. Right? I mean, there was a time when this was not a litmus test issue, and that's when they had the majority. It's only when they started forcing these guys to take more and more difficult and more liberal votes, the Democratic House majority collapsed in the 2010 midterms. This is a win-win for Republicans. I kind of am surprised that I think the most interesting lesson out of this, coming out of this, I'm making air quotes as I say this, unity tour, is that the divisions of the Democratic primary of 2016 really didn't go away with the end of the race. And I think it's going to be a long road ahead for Democrats as they try to figure out how to synthesize this and how much dissent from orthodoxy they're willing to accept in their candidates.
Yeah, not a lot from what we're seeing so far. Jim, as part of this tour, You know, Bernie was out there with Tom Perez, as we mentioned. And Bernie, of course, inexplicably, or maybe it's the free college, who knows, became the darling of the millennials. And so you think Bernie would be down a little bit in making some pop culture analogies, you know, like Rubio can talk at length about Pitbull for some reason. Here was Bernie Sanders' pop culture reference earlier in the week.
You know, some of you may remember a Woody Guthrie song. It's a song about a terribly bitter strike that took place in Holland County, Kentucky, in the coal mines in the 30s.
Jim, you totally remember that song, right?
I do. Now, I just made an Abraham Lincoln, John Wilkes Booth joke, so maybe I shouldn't throw stones, but you tell him, Bernie. You tell him, Grandpa.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and on to the airwaves of MSNBC and Howard Dean. Jim, you and I talked last week about Berkeley deciding that instead of defending free speech, it would defend rioters and not allow Ann Coulter to speak. Then they retracted it a little bit and offered her kind of a compromise at a bad location and so forth that she didn't like. So she's not going to accept that. She still wants to speak. Howard Dean has decided that Ann Coulter doesn't have a constitutional right to free speech because he's deemed it hate speech. And he's got a lot of different Supreme Court decisions that he thinks backs up his position.
And the most recent is a John Roberts opinion that said the Phelps people, those that church out in Kansas, had the right to picket horrible, offensive with signs, military funerals. Two, in 2002, there was a Supreme Court said that crossboarding was illegal because it could incite violence. And three, the Chaplinsky case in 1942 said that speech was not permitted if it included fighting words that were likely to incite violence. So this is not a clear-cut carrying on the way the right does. The right loves it to be able to say anything they like, no matter how offensive it is. Well, Ann Coulter has used words that you cannot use on television to describe Jews, blacks, gays, Muslims, immigrants, and Hispanics. I think there's a case to be made that that invokes the Chaplinsky decision, which is fighting words likely to incite violence. And I think Berkeley is within its rights to make the decision that it puts their campus in danger if they have her there.
Jim, how slippery is our slope right now?
I'm marveling this guy was once a governor, was once a Democratic frontrunner to be president of the United States, was once a Democratic National Committee chairman. He's wrong on every count. And I'm trying to think about, I'll just take them in order. The first case he cites regarding the Phelps Church and those ninnies who protest funerals, the court ruled 8-1 that they have a right to do that. Dean is citing a case that basically argues against his case, his position, that basically if Fred Phelps and his nut jobs can make a protest like that outside a funeral, then why on earth would you say that Ann Coulter isn't allowed to give her speech? The second case he cites regards cross-burning, and in that one, I believe it was a lot of concurring in part and dissenting in part, but the gist of the decision was you can't burn a cross on somebody's lawn as a threat. Threatening speech is that. But if you want to burn a cross simply as an art project or something like that, in other words, you cannot assume that a threat is implied, which is what the state law had said. The court struck that down. They said, no, prosecutor, you have to prove that cross-burning was intended to intimidate or threaten someone. Now, you know, cross-burning strike me is pretty inherently threatening, intimidating, but that's what the Supreme Court said. Again, it does not allow you to believe that a threat is automatic in a particular speech or form of gesture. If Ann Coulter goes up on stage and says, hey, let's go beat up Howard Dean, then it's a threat. But if she, you know, unless she says something like that, that's already illegal. You can't just say that, well, we're not going to let you speak because we think you might say something like this. And then the third one, the Chaplinsky case, back in 1942, during World War II, this has basically been watered down very extensively in the previous years, and a lot of legal scholars say if the same case came up before the court these days, it would probably get overturned. In short, basically wearing a jacket that said F-word the draft was ruled not to be fighting words. In other words, just offending someone is not a fighting word. So basically, I guess you have to go up to somebody and say something mean about his mama. And then maybe that's considered fighting words. But basically, every court case subsequent to that one has narrowed the definition of fighting words more and more, so there's really no reason to think that a speech by Ann Coulter, even by the nature of being offensive, is going to qualify as fighting words. Finally, the part that just struck me as nutty, and I talked about on Twitter this weekend, is his citing of FCC rules. The FCC can only restrict language on programming that is broadcast across the public airwaves, basically radio and broadcast television. If you watch basic cable, if you watch premium cable, you've probably noticed the FCC, you can say anything you want on that. And in fact, the great irony is Howard Dean is saying this on MSNBC on a cable program. So the FCC cannot restrict what he's saying there. Obviously, the FCC has no authority to restrict what is said at a speech at a university or something. They could have, let's say, Coulter drops the F-bomb and a broadcast network were to broadcast that. Then the FCC could go after the network, but it could not necessarily go after Coulter for saying it. There was no prosecution of George Carlin for his seven dirty words routine back then. All of this is in a piece that I have on the editor's desk at National Review, but this is why you listen to the Three Martini Lunch. Sometimes you get to hear it ahead of time.
There you go. Excellent point. And if the administrators of Cal Berkeley were actually interested in providing a safe environment and not tacitly agreeing with the rioters and the anarchists out there, there's an easy way to do this. You honor free speech, and then you secure the area. And you know the best way to do that, Jim? Simply Safe Home Security.
There you go.
Absolutely. When you order your Simply Safe Home Security system online, you're taking the first easy step to protecting your home and family. With entry sensors, motion sensors, and glass break sensors, soon you'll make your home a burglar's worst nightmare. And the best part is, you'll have it all set up in under an hour.
Simply Safe comes pre-programmed to work right out of the box. You just plug in the base station and it will talk you through the whole process. Even someone who isn't the slightest bit handy, like myself, can install it. The entire system is wireless, so there's no need to drill holes in your walls or do any other kind of permanent damage. Once you're all set up, Simply Safe makes it easy to stay protected month to month. There are no long-term contracts, no hidden fees, just $14.99 a month for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, professional monitoring and emergency dispatch service.
Don't wait another day to take your home safety into your own hands. Get Simply Safe. Go to simplysafe.com/ricochet right now to get 10% off your home security system. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com. Go now, or at least at the end of the podcast, then go. Yeah. simplysafe.com/ricochet. And Jim, as we mentioned at the top, there's no crazy martini today because we're making very necessary room for a champagne toast. Cato Byrne, the former Washington editor of your publication, a National Review, passed away over the weekend after a battle with cancer. A lot of folks like me who didn't know her personally knew her from her work on the Capital Gang and, of course, what she wrote for National Review. You and many other of your National Review colleagues writing fantastic tributes about not only what a brilliant and talented conservative she was, but what a great person she was. And our condolences to you and all who loved her at National Review.
Well, thank you, Greg. I'm glad everyone got to see the public case, and she was every bit as, I don't know if merciless is the right word. Vicious makes her sound a little meaner than she was, but man, oh man, whether it was Al Hunt or Mark Shields, Margaret Carlson, you know, you have to pity them. Kate did not take prisoners. She was tough. She knew her issues backwards and forwards. She was always extremely well informed, and I think it was John J. Miller who had the accurate observation that she loved to begin sentences, as you know. And then very often she would tell you something that, no, you did not know. But she didn't want to make you feel stupid. So she was very kind of saying, well, as you know, blah, 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 blah. And you'd be nodding and say, yes, I knew that. What you didn't get, and it was kind of intriguing to see other comments from folks like Tim Carney and a couple J.D. Vance. She had a remarkable ability. I think she just liked taking young writers, young folks, and if not quite taking them under their wing, just making them feel important. And I think Tim Carney put it well. She made you feel important even when you weren't. She made you feel like a big deal even when you weren't a big deal. That's particularly very much the way I felt and when I remembered when I heard of her passing, joining National Review back in 2004 and being the new guy, the new kid on the block, not sure if you're going to fit in, not sure, you're kind of a little intimidated, particularly when she had this, this on-screen persona. And as you know, Miller put it well, she was like the dead mother of National Review. She really took everybody under her wing and did her best to encourage everybody, steer you away from bad decisions, steer you towards good decisions. And she's going to be very, very much missed. I hadn't seen her in a while. I'd heard she might have had a health issue or two. She did smoke like a chimney. But man, oh man, Washington is lesser and the world is lesser for not having Cato Byrne with us anymore. And so that's why I'm raising my glass today. And she'll be missed for a very long time.
Well said, and we'll end on that somber note. Condolences, of course, to her family. And Jim, we'll reconvene tomorrow. Talk to you then.
All right. See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And now, don't forget to go visit our friends at Simply Safe Home Security, simplysafe.com/ricochet. Get that 10% off your home security system, simplysafe.com/ricochet. And join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.